It is time for the Home Improvement Show. I'm Joanne Brakus, and sitting right in front of me is the one, the only, Walter Assey, president of Vernovco, here to take all of your questions. 514-790-0800 is our text line. You can start sending in those messages. They're already coming in. Or call us and ask Walter your question. Hello, Walter. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
You look rejuvenated. I know that, not to say that every week you don't come in here with a smile, but for the last few weeks you have been under flood stress. It looks like you had a nap or two.
I did. I'm working a bit more normal hours now. And, you know, last week I took a day off.
Good. Walter took a day off, but he's very much here to take your questions again by text or by phone. I want to get you to react before we start taking these calls. The Montreal Gazette here is reporting that the Quebec flooding in August caused nearly $2.5 billion in insured damage. So that's $2.5 billion. These are claims going into insurance companies. And the question I had for you was, do you think that moving forward, this is going to change insurance policy coverage? Can they just say, we're not covering sewer backup, we're not doing this or that? Or can they multiply or increase the prices exponentially?
Well, I mean, usually when insurance companies have a bad year, it's like a business, right? And it's not one insurance company that had a bad year in this case. They all had equally a bad year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, from a business sense, it's only logical that they're going to increase the premiums. And what happens in a lot of the cases that we've seen in the past, when you have a big natural disaster that costs insurance companies money, unfortunately, they blanket increase everyone.
Really?
So whether you had a claim or you didn't have a claim, everybody gets jacked up.
Everyone's going to take a hit.
That's usually what we've seen happen in the past. Now, does insurance company have the right to say, I insure this, I don't insure that? It's a business. So it's a question of, you don't like what they're offering you, you go somewhere else. And we see it now. You see, like, some clients that we've seen had no insurance on sewer backup, for example. And others had limited insurance. We've seen that during the 2017-2019 flooding, where insurance companies pulled coverages from certain areas. You know, if you're on the ZIS, you're not covered for overnight.
Well, yeah, we were talking about the Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu in particular. For years and years, it kept flooding and flooding and flooding. And then they changed the zoning of it, which completely, like, they named it a flood zone. And then the insurance costs are impossible in some cases.
Exactly. We've also seen a lot of requests from insurance companies, which I think they're going to become more like a condition to insure you. So we've seen a lot of letters going out, a lot of homeowners asking them to install backwater valves. Certain cases we've seen, they're asking them to install sump pumps. So we've seen that now they're trying to adjust and maybe force people or nudge people to do things.
So the prerequisite to the coverage would be do A, B, C, D, E?
That is correct. That's exactly it.
Right. And then that comes out of pocket. Or, I mean, there are some the government incentives to help you pay for these things.
Yeah. But I mean, at the end of the day, a lot of this damage, unfortunately, is we talk about the $2.5 billion that the insurance is paying out, but we're not talking about what the homeowner is going to have to pay out of pocket. Because remember, a lot of homeowners were underinsured.
Underinsured. We talked about a lot of this. You were saying, right, underinsured, that you have to read every single clause and make sure that you have enough coverage. But the problem is that underinsured often means maybe you don't have the means to do it. I mean, what should people be thinking in terms of insurance?
Well, I mean, if we want to quantify the damage, if the insurance company are saying we paid out $2.5 billion
in insured damage,
what we're not saying is what is the real damage, because they paid out $2.5 billion, but 80 or 90% of their policies maybe had a maximum. And what's the percentage of
out of pocket
that went above that maximum? So it's a bigger story than we think. It is, like I said it from day one, it is a natural disaster as far as losses are concerned and the size of it. I mean, we're still going to homes with water in their basement. I mean, what carpets, what floors, what subfloors?
Yeah.
So there's you know, still, it's still a story that is evolving.
We have a texter here that says, much like the great idea of residential aluminum wiring, insurance companies will probably force homeowners to invest in installing the backflow valve. You see that happening?
I mean, the backflow valve is, I find it a good idea. in general. I mean, the logic, there's a logic there to it. So what you want to do is you want to ensure that the water from the city does not come into your house in case the, you know, the drainage gets overloaded. And it's what it is. It's just a simple flap that shuts down and only allows the water from your home to go out. And then when no water from your house is coming out, it's just like a flap that's...
But I feel like that's not foolproof, given what happened last time.
It's not if you, for example, were to use the water during the storm, because now you're allowing the water out, and the pressure of the city sewer will always be stronger than, you know, your pressure.
Mm.
So you always lose. So the idea is do not use the water during a rainstorm. Do not use your water. That's one, number one. The other issue with it would be, are we doing it on the branches as well? So when you do it on the main is one thing, but if you have other drainage or other, if you have a bathroom in your basement,
mm-hmm.
Then you would have to have on the 3-inch another backwater valve. So a lot of people kind of cut corners when it comes to this, and they only do it on the main. So there are ways to make it more foolproof. Provided that you also maintain it. So don't forget, it's a flap. It opens and it closes.
Yeah.
And that flap have a seal. If that seal have some gunk and buildup on it, then the flap could get stuck.
But are we doing this, or are we calling someone to do this?
The maintenance you could do yourself. Just okay. Make sure that the plumber shows you
how to do it.
One before they leave.
Okay, we've got so many questions coming in for you. Everyone's so curious about what to do, because, like we said, the insurance companies are likely going to ask you to do all these things moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Angelo on the line. Angelo has a question about French drains. Angelo, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thanks for taking my call.
Take it away.
I have a question. During the flood that we had recently, a few of my neighbors had flooding in their basements. I'm not sure the reason, the French drains or problem with the backflow valve, whatever. I have French drains currently in my property, and they're working fine, but a lot of my neighbors are suggesting that I should take the downspout out from the French drain and let it drain on the side of the house instead of in the French drain in case of flooding. Do you recommend that, or should I leave things as they are? I've had no problems so far, but just getting pressure from my neighbors to do that.
So let me ask you, what you're saying is that your downspout right now goes underground into your French drain?
Yes, I have two French drains, one on each side.
Okay.
And it's going into the French drains, and I've had no problem with the recent flood, with recent heavy flows that we had, rain and storms, what have you. Everything's fine, but my neighbors are suggesting that I should, as they have done, take the downspout and away from the French drain and make it drain outside the property.
Angelo, you have very good neighbors.
Yeah.
And they're right. You don't want to overload your French drain. So the whole idea of the gutter system and the downspout and the extension of the downspout is you want to minimize the amount of water that's coming around your foundation. By you... overloading, if you want a big rainfall, taking all of those gutters. And the worst part is not this, Angelo. The worst part is when you have it from a downspout, it's more targeted water pressure. So yeah. Now you are overloading a specific area of the foundation. And any weakness in that foundation is going to cause water to seep through.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, do you have a subfloor in your basement, Angelo?
Sorry, a subfloor? You mean the basement's finished? There is a subfloor, yes. There's wood on top, yes.
So here's the trick. Sometimes we think we did not get water, and we, in certain cases, we do get water. It goes under the subfloor, and you don't even see it.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I'm saying, how it's usually discovered by the homeowner, they're walking, and then one day their foot goes through the floor, or it starts to smell really bad in the basement. So the subfloor could give you that false sense of security. And we've seen it in this particular damage. We've seen it in a lot of cases. I mean, I don't know. And there's a couple of follow-ups. Maybe we'll do it after the break.
Yeah, Angela, just stay on the line. We'll continue this French drain conversation. This is the Home Improvement Show. Welcome back. Walter Astley continues to take your questions on your home improvement projects, your questions, your needs, your concerns. 514-790-0800 is the text line and the phone line. And just before the break, we were speaking with Angelo and his French drains situation. And Walter, you wanted to add something.
Yeah, I mean, you have to understand if your foundation is, you know, built in the 70s, in the 60s, in the 50s, what typically would have happened is they would have installed, like they would have applied tar for waterproofing the foundation. The issue with that is that with time, the tar will decompose and break apart, and then rendering your foundation more porous. So the idea is, as the foundation is aging, you want to slope away as much of the water as possible. That's why we do aggressive landscaping by ensuring we don't have a negative slope towards the house. Gutter extensions, minimum 5 feet. I mean, it's not just to put a small 2 feet extension that does nothing. So you need to be 5 feet minimum away from the home. And if you can create a drench and put it underground and have it pour into a dry pit, that would be awesome as well. But really the secret is you want the water to be about 5 feet away from your foundation. Anything less than that, then the water will find its way back into your foundation or your French drains.
All right, Angel, does that help you out?
Yes, thank you. Just one question. I have two French drains. One is draining, can drain on the walk, on the unistone, which is downsloping, but the other one is on the lawn. If I take it out, I'll have to put, like you said, maybe an extension 5 feet away. But if I just do remove one, would that be sufficient, or you think it's...
I mean, it's again, it's how much you want to overcharge your French drain, right? Yeah. It's really one or the other. It doesn't really matter. For me, downspouts, I want them away from the house. It doesn't matter how many I have, really.
Thank you. And just one...
Angelo.
one last question. Who can do this work? Is there anybody?
Any landscaper can. You know, any landscaper can do it. Like people that do pavé usually would do that as well.
All right.
If you want to do it underground, you need, you know, it's an excavation job. So a small excavator or someone that can do it manually takes a lot longer, mind you, but a small excavator is better.
Thank you, Angelo.
Thank you very much. You're very helpful.
Have a great one. We've got Joe on the line. Because remember, Walter, we were talking about this backwater valve. Mm-hmm. Joe has a question about the number of valves. Joe, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Good morning, everyone. My question is, and I'm a little confused. I have a backwater valve for the storm drain, you know, but I don't have one for the sanitary line. And now I'm deliberating. Should I just install one valve, one backwater valve, and it's going to be open for the sanitary? Or should I install three of them? Because I have three drains in the basement, one for the bathroom and two normal drains, sewer drains. So what should I do? Should I install three backwater valves or should I just install one on the main pipe going to the city?
So the proper way to go about it would be one on the main and then one on each branch. So whatever you have, a 3-inch. That's correct. So it's an additional, I mean, you don't have to, but that's what I would recommend that you do. Because if any water comes in through the main, at least it will stop at the branches. And that's the idea behind it. So it's like an extra layer of security. A plumber, I mean, once you call the plumber, you can have the discussions of the pros and the cons for, you know, each decision you make. But that would be the adequate way to get it done, too.
So just to summarize, you would install actually four for the main and then the three.
Now, going back to the drains, Joe, I mean, I've seen a lot of places where they have these useless drains, to be quite frank with you. You need a drain where you would have a water source of some kind. So if you have, a laundry room or in a basement or a hot water tank. But I mean, a drain in the middle of a floor somewhere in nowhere that doesn't, you know. So maybe you should have a discussion of not having as many drains in your basement as well. So that's another thing that, especially that most of these drains are not even accessible. You have subfloors over them, and you never get to access them, clean them, pour water into them. So yeah, that's maybe another discussion that you should have with the plumber as well.
Okay, and just one thing, you know, for the main, if I decide just to do it for the main pipe going to the city,
yeah,
sewer pipe, I understand that the code, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, you cannot install a conventional closed flapper. It has to be an open backwater valve. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
But for the other drains, you know, next to the water tank, the bathroom, and my third drain, they could be closed, the conventional closed flapper.
That is correct.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, Joe, thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, we've got a question on the text line now, Walter. It says, hi, Walter and Joanne. Just a very quick question. We had our basement floors, which were flooded, removed and treated professionally for wetness and mold. And now the smell is just unbearable. Do you know if it normally subsides in a few days, or is it safe to still be in the house when it still smells like this? Thank you from Wendy in DDO.
What they forgot to mention in their text is the smell of what?
Ah, so if it's the smell of mold, I'm guessing they didn't do a good job.
If it's the smell of mold, it means that there's a good chance that they did not discard enough of the wet materials.
Okay.
And that's something we've been seeing a lot of. Especially in cases where people are underinsured, they're kind of not going as generous on what needs to be removed. So I was at a home yesterday that had removed part of the subfloor, thinking that the water went so far. And we did small tests. We had high readings. So we opened the subfloor.
And it was all the way down?
Packed with water.
Just a question. If Wendy's referring to the smell of like the products
the disinfectant.
That they use?
So the disinfectant, usually a good practice would be after the dwell time, you should wipe it by a damp cloth. Not wet. You don't want to introduce a lot of wetness because you're going to increase the humidity. And if you are, you have to dry it right away.
Mm-hmm.
So what she could do is she could mop it. Was a damp mop, I should say, and then the smell should subside. She should open the windows.
But it's safe for her to be in the house.
Yeah, so it depends on the type of disinfectants as well. So you have disinfectants that are chemical based, and you have others that are plant based.
Mm.
Chemical based usually. They're more aggressive and they're not as friendly, if you wish, to the smell and what have you. Now, this has been many days, so technically whatever fumes are in the air should have subsided.
She should call back, I'm guessing.
Well, she should call back. She should also, the other thing with it is how much was applied.
Mm.
So you cannot go crazy with, you know, it's not like you're hosing it down, the disinfectant. That too much of anything is really not good.
Yeah.
So what I would do is I would have the area mopped, cleaned, and then see what happens if it's a disinfectant issue, and have a lot of fresh water, fresh air.
Air. Windows, if possible.
Correct.
I hope that helps you out. Wendy, this is the Home Improvement Show. You just heard from Walter Assey, president of Renovco. Keep those questions coming in. 514-790-0800 is the text line and the phone line. This is the Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey, president of Renovco. I'm Joanne Brackus, and we are taking your questions for all your home improvement needs. 514-790-0800 is the landline, and of course, the text line. Norma has been waiting patiently on the phone, and she's got a question for you, Walter, about her kitchen cabinets. Norma, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Take it away.
Thank you for taking my call. Mm. Good morning. Yes, I do have kitchen cabinets. They're hanging on. They're on the ceiling. After I have a molding, and then the kitchen cabinets are over my countertop, over my sink. I mean, and there is a crack, and now it's sort of falling down. It's gonna fall down. So I don't know what to do. Or who that can help me with that. It has a length of 78 inches, and it's not It's against another cabinet, which is tied to a wall. But I'm afraid it's going to fall because there's a crack, and I see like a screw coming out at one end.
Walter?
Okay. So you're saying that these cabinets are screwed into the ceiling?
Yeah.
Really?
Well,
you're sure?
Yeah, they're hanging, sort of.
They're hanging,
okay. But on the left-hand side, there's a wall, but it's very, very narrow.
Got it. And they're screwed into the ceiling, and now you see the screws popping out.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you tried drill them back into place?
No.
Okay. So that's the first thing I would try.
Okay.
But the fact that the screw is popping out is kind of concerning. Have you had any water damage at all in this area at one point?
I don't think so, unless my neighbor upstairs, it's in a condo.
Oh, it's in a condo.
Yeah.
And is it a wood structure condo or a concrete condo? How many floors
concrete.
Is your condo?
8.
Okay. So here's, I think, okay, now that explains it. So one of two things could have happened when they installed your cabinets. Mm-hmm. If they screwed them into concrete, they might have not used concrete screws. And that's why they're popping out. Okay. The other thing that could have happened is that they have screwed it in the C-channel or the metal channels, if there is any, in the ceiling, and that's not strong enough. So okay. What I would recommend mm-hmm. is, I mean, you can call a carpenter at this point
okay.
or a kitchen installer and get them to see what have been screwed to what. Let me put it this way.
Okay.
If you use the wrong screw in the wrong material, that screw is not going to last. And I have a feeling that's what happened in your case. At the beginning, I thought it was a home and they screwed it into wood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very common that kitchen installers carry a lot of wood screws with them and very, you know.
I guess it's heavy too because we put dishes and.
Should she empty these things out?
Yeah,
for now,
I emptied them.
That's right. That's exactly it. But heavy or not, they're supposed to take the load.
Okay.
You see cabinets hanging by the ceiling all the time. There's a way to fasten them, and there's a way to have them, you know, well installed.
Mm-hmm.
But I would start by seeing if the right screws were installed in this case, Norma.
Okay,
Norma, I hope
Thank
that
you
helps
so much.
You out.
Have a great day. Bye.
You too. We've got Tony on the line, and Tony has water in his crawl space. Tony, take it away.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. So I have a split-level home. It was built probably in the 1950s. We just completed about 5 years ago, we redid our French drains. We tarred the foundation wall and put a membrane. But when there's heavy rain, we still have water, like this slab is wet in the crawl space. It's not like water's coming in from the walls or anything. The crawl in the middle of the house, you know, we have water coming from underneath. I'm suspecting it's the water table just rising, but I'm not sure why. There would be water. The slab is wet.
Okay. Do you know how thick your slab is in the crawl space?
No. I have a pit in the crawl space where my sump pump is.
Oh, so you do have a sump pump there.
I do have a sump pump, but what happened when we put the French drains, because I live on a hill, and rather than connecting the French drains to the sump pump, they just connected it to the ditch. So it goes, you know, away from the house. So the water from the French drain doesn't go into the pit. It just drains into the ditch on the side of my house.
Okay. I mean, that's fine. That's French drain related. I'm more concerned with the hydrostatic pressure from the slab or from the ground that's coming through. So one of the things you want to look at is the thickness of your slab is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, do you have any cracks that are developing in the slab? Because if there's any water that's coming from underneath, it's finding its way into the home. And
no,
The other thing is, I want to make sure that your sump pump was installed in the right place. So the location of the sump pump is one thing to have it. It's another thing where you install it. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, if you have a sump pump there, the job of that sump pump is to pump anything that is also coming from, you know, from underneath the slab as well, right? Mm-hmm. So the fact that, does it pump? Have you tried it? Does it work in certain cases, heavy downpours?
Yeah, during the heavy downpour we just had, the pump was working, but, you know, there was the hydrostatic pressure was making the slab wet.
Okay. So, I mean, if you can just determine what the thickness of your slab is somehow, mm-hmm. that would help tremendously, because usually what happens in crawl spaces, in a lot of cases, people just schlep as little as possible of concrete, you know, because for them it's a crawl space, we don't care. What you need is a minimum 5 inches. Okay. And, you know, preferably they installed gravel and geotextile and everything else. But if you have, let's say, a 2-inch slab, then the ground, you know, from underneath, there's not enough concrete to stop the water from seeping through.
Okay.
Okay,
I do have there is a hole at some places in the crawl space. I guess they drilled holes, so I could measure the thickness of the slab just by looking at the depth of the hole before I hit the gravel.
Why would they have drilled holes in your slab?
I don't know. When we got the house, there was holes in the crawl space, in the slab. But the water is not coming out of those holes. It's more, it's the slab itself is wet. And it's just in a certain area. It's, you know, like right in the middle of the house. We notice when there's heavy downpours, that portion of the slab just is wet.
Start by measuring the thickness of the slab. That's number one. Number two, investigate why these holes were made. It's just a weird thing to have random holes like that, because, you know, you're exposing it to the earth underneath, and these are weak points in your slab that have no reason being there. A hole for a drain, I understand, but just a random hole, mm-hmm. you can't.
Tony, yeah. you gotta start investigating that.
Yeah.
All right.
I thought those holes were probably put there in case there was, you know, water, you know, a place for the water to drain, but.
But the thing is, it could also go the other way, because now if water is coming, it's usually either coming from the foundation or from under the slab. So you're not really helping your case, rendering your slab useless. In this case.
Okay, bye. Tony, thank you for your call. Walter Assey, president of Renovco, continues to take your questions for all of your home improvement needs. Although I do have to say that George from LaSalle cheekily is not a word, in a cheeky fashion, texted that in his house he has a broken heart. That's not for you, is it, Walter?
A crazy glue or PL construction glue. That's always...
some ice cream in a romantic movie. Okay, let's get to the actual questions here. We've got Joanne. Can you please ask Walter what he would recommend for a basement floor? I had a floating floor. However, due to the flood, I need to change the whole thing. What's best, ceramic tiles or vinyl flooring? And should it go directly on the cement, or should I have a false subfloor? This comes to us from Mike.
Okay. So if you are looking to floodproof your home, porcelain right on cement would be the answer.
Porcelain on cement?
That's correct.
Okay.
And the reason being is any type of flooding, if you have the porcelain on cement, you don't need to break the porcelain.
Wow.
So that is there forever.
That sounds expensive, is it?
It is more expensive. So that's another thing we want to mention. You know, the other question is your budget. Because it's obviously, if you don't have the budget, then porcelain is not the answer.
But does it then reduce your insurance costs?
It might. Oh. It might. That is a bit more going in the nitty-gritty of things. Mm. I have not seen them look at the type of flooring per se to determine coverage yet. The downside to that is the fact that it's going to be a cold floor in the winter, right? So, you know, it depends. If you use your basement occasionally, it's fine. If you use it all the time, it might not be as comfortable.
Beautiful rugs.
That's right. So the other option is to go rugs. Now, if you want something more practical and budget-friendly, you can go with vinyl PVC lats or vinyl lats in general because they're reusable.
Mm.
So, yes, you would have to still take them out in case of flood, but you could reuse the same floor. So if you have... you don't have enough insurance, you know, every dollar counts, and that might be the answer for you.
So the reusable vinyl, when you say reusable, you'd have to take it off, clean it, and reuse it?
Correct.
Okay.
Now, the subfloor per se, there's the only reason I would have a subfloor is actually not one reason. There's a couple. One of them would be to even out the slab so you could shim and make sure that the, you know, that you have the anchoring and the leveling done right so you have a straight floor in the basement, and to cut the humidity coming from the slab.
Mm.
But in a flood, it's not your best friend, right? If you have water seeping through your foundation, you have a subfloor, chances are you're not going to see it right away. So it has its own, again, positives and negatives, really. So
well, yeah, because every time you say you don't see it right away, I think mold. I'm learning, Walter. I'm learning.
There you go.
Okay, another question here. The garage floor has dried out but hasn't been cleaned yet after the flood. What is the best product to clean this kind of dirt and polluted floor? Remember, you did talk a lot about people using bleach all over the place and things like that.
We don't want to do that. So, I mean, you're going to start first by... doing a regular cleaning before you disinfect. So you would clean it like you would clean any type of floor to get rid of all the debris, all the mud, all the residue that's left behind. Then when it's nicely cleaned and dried, mm-hmm. not just cleaned, then you can apply Benefect, you can apply Cognorium Mold Control, Foster. So there's any product that is plant-based, but it's a disinfectant for mold.
And geared towards mold.
That is correct.
Okay, a question here from you. The person didn't leave their name.
Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
And then when you apply it, always follow the instructions because each manufacturer have different instructions, meaning some of these products have to be, they are pre-mixed and others you have to mix yourself.
So that always scares me when people start mixing things by themselves.
So if you are going to mix it, please follow the instructions. The other thing is look at the dwell time of the product. Because that product, technically, after you apply it, a lot of suppliers tell you, apply it, look at the dwell time, and then clean it off.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's a process.
Follow the instructions. They're not suggestions. Remember that.
There are, yeah, exactly.
Yes, these
they're
are more
instructions.
They're do's, not maybes. Okay. Someone here is writing in, as an apartment tenant, why should I have a $2 million civil liability? My landlord has asked for a copy of my insurance papers. So I think it's a good idea to have insurance, even if you're a tenant. What is the answer here?
The answer is, in Quebec, I believe you're not obliged to have a tenant insurance. Mm. And if I'm not mistaken, the landlord can impose one on you. I don't know if they changed the laws, but that's what I've checked the last time. But it's crazy not to have it. And remember, you're having something called a liability insurance. Because sometimes if you are the cause of the fire or you are the cause of the flood, the insurance company of the landlord will pay for the damages, but very likely you're going to get sued.
They're going to come after you.
I've seen a case, for example, that the tenant caused the fire, did not have insurance, and they took him to court and, you know, for the damages. And
they took him to the cleaners, is what you want to say.
The story was he had to pay a portion of his salary for God knows how many years.
Wow.
So it's not a fun story. That's number one. Number two, if you're a tenant and there's a damage, you want your contents or your furniture to be insured.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even if the damage is not caused by you, caused by the building by another tenant, if you don't have insurance, nobody's going to move you out. You're going to have to pay movers yourself.
Wow.
And you can sue after and you can do this and do that, but really, like, how long are you gonna, it's going to take for you
and
to
it's
get
gonna
the money
back? And it's going to cost you more probably than you'll get covered.
That's right.
But can they impose the $2 million, sorry?
Well, I mean, $2 million is becoming more or less,
I feel like that's the standard. Yeah.
It used to be $1 million, but it's not really a big difference between the million and the two
in
million.
The price that you're
that's
paying.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So, and let's be fair. $2 million, I mean, $1 million in today's money, if you're living in an apartment building that's 8 floors or 10 floors, you know, and you cause a fire or a flood, $2 million is not a lot of money in damages. So, The more you have, the better. And if you look at the difference, it's not that much bigger.
So again, it is probably suggested that, you know, we're not sure if it's you're obliged to do it, but it's Walter is suggesting that you go for the $2 million if you 100%. Can afford it.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, that that does it for us, Walter. Walter, a much more refreshed and rested Walter. Again, president of Renovco will be back next week to take all of your questions for your home improvement projects. If you have concerns, yes, someone asked Walter about the broken heart. Would you say crazy glue? We laugh, we joke, we have a good time. That does it for us.